This is Power Athlete Radio. With your host, Denny K, Professor Booty, and the Luke Summers. And now, toes forward, hips locked, shoulders set, and retract those scapulas. It's time for some knowledge bombs.
Thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. This week, we welcome athlete, author, and Catalyst Athletics coach, Greg Everett. This well-known figure in the world of strength and conditioning believes that Olympic weightlifting has changed dramatically, both to the benefit of the popularity, but to the detriment of old-school ethics. As someone who evolved into the sport well before social media, Greg waxes nostalgic on his past experience of embracing weightlifting as a lifestyle instead of an accessory. From the garage of Mike Bergner to his own beautiful facility, Greg talks about how he has changed with the sport to make opportunities for himself. Although not every aspect of the business is pleasurable, he is steadfast in his training principles and unapologetically opinionated. Discover why he thinks so many athletes get caught up in the trap of training like most elite athletes in the world, and why it's not only suboptimal, it can also be counterproductive. John and Greg catch up on all things Olympic weightlifting and unravel the mysteries of the internet in an hour's time. This is episode 127.
What's happening, Power Athlete Nation? Welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. This is Denny. I'm joined with Pex, John, and Luke. And today our guest is the founder of Catalyst Athletics, author, filmmaker, comedian, life coach. What else am I missing, Greg?
Super charming, good looking.
super charming, good looking, Mr. Greg Everett.
You forgot pleasant. Greg is also one of the most pleasant people I've ever been around. That's really the word that comes to mind.
I got that feeling right away when we were talking off air. I mean, this guy has got to be one of the most pleasant individuals.
Yeah. Greg and I are on like this ongoing text message chain of information, and pretty funny. Whenever it comes through, Greg usually has something that I have to put the phone down and laugh. So also one of the funnier people I know. So
I do my best.
That's a compliment coming from you.
No, it is. I mean, how long would you say that text message chain we've been on? It's probably about 4 years we've been going on now.
Yeah, so. It's got to be. Easily. Yeah. There's just so much material.
There's never an absence of funny shit going on in the world of training and strength conditioning and writing and the internet. Online.
According to the show template, we're just going to open that text message, scroll to the beginning, and you guys are going to read them off and then describe
every picture. Yeah, no question of the entertainment value, but that might prove to be a bad idea.
Yeah,
you guys talk shit on me?
It's usually like a picture or something like screen captured. And then, that's all that'll come through. And then, 10 minutes later, it'll just be like, what the fuck did I just read? What the fuck,
you know? Just a barrage of incredibly insightful commentary.
Well, there's a lot of stuff to laugh about, you know. In this, day in the internet where you can pretty much fabricate whoever you want to be and you can cultivate any image you want, regardless of whether it's true or not, you just basically have whatever, as long as the URL is available. and you can go through and pick out these kind of esoteric, innocuous kind of words that kind of relate to different things, especially Olympic weightlifting. You too can be an Olympic weightlifting superhero.
That's the great thing about esoteric words is that if someone doesn't understand it, the natural presumption is that they're just not smart enough,
or they're not the
owner of the word just knows so much more. There must be more to it.
Or they're not in the cool kids circle. So if you don't know, I don't know.
Dude, if you don't know, I'm not gonna tell you.
And if you can't afford it, big man. What is it? If you don't know, big man, I'm not gonna afford it.
Yes.
Well, thank you for thanks for carving out a few minutes of your extremely busy time and basically getting on here and bullshitting, which our Power Athlete Radio, which should be really just called talking shit on the radio. So,
hey, that's what I do most of my day.
We try to put out some information that people can learn stuff from, though. I mean, we put a valiant effort towards that.
Well,
it's like I tell my lifters, I don't give a fuck about how hard you're trying. I just want to see results.
Yeah, well, you know.
Effort's assumed.
Yeah, like, isn't effort just like fucking, yeah, I mean, like, it's a hard deal. People are like, you know, we taught seminars and people are like, oh, but I'm trying as hard as I can. I'm like, trying doesn't fucking impress me. Like, everybody tries. Like, show me that you're able to do these things. And, you know, I can't remember what age do you stop getting, like, a good, like, a medal or a pat on the head for just trying hard.
I think late 40s or 50s.
40 or 50. Well, I remember when we were pretty young, like, there was like, oh, you played hard today, even though you lost. And, like, you know, here's your orange slice.
Spirit of the game.
And, you know, and then you were, like, so stoked because you got to eat orange slices, like, 100 of them after the game, and maybe get a Gatorade. But and then I remember all of a sudden when it was like, yeah, you guys sucked. But, like, there was, like, no real, like, discussion anymore about trying hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that was probably the 12 to 14-year-old age range where that switch happens.
Well,
which,
but, I mean,
that's fair.
Well, Greg, we're about the same age. So, I mean, that was probably in, like, the 80s. Cause, you know, like, maybe, like, the early 80s, the mid-80s, I want to say, maybe when I was about 10 years old. Like, I think, like, that was, like, all of a sudden, once I got, like, 11 or 12, that shit stopped. It was like, you're good, you suck, go sit on the bench.
Yeah, I think I was fortunate to have, like, I mean, I played all the typical sports as a kid, which is, you know, the basis of my incredible athleticism. But I think I was fortunate enough to have coaches generally who were very straightforward and honest and didn't coddle anybody, regardless of age. So I'm very grateful for that.
Before we get going, why don't we do, like, what if there is somebody? What if there's somebody who doesn't know who Greg Everett is? Should we do, like...
I think we should talk about...
They need to get off this radio show right now.
We should talk about Greg Everett, the... but let's talk about his history. Let's talk about Greg Everett, the author.
Okay.
The filmmaker. Mm-hmm. The CrossFitter.
Is this the Genesis story?
And then the Olympic, weightlifter, and then the Olympic weightlifting coach, and then the Olympic weightlifter again.
Oh,
wow.
It sounds exhausting.
Well, give me the 5-minute version.
Delve into this.
Okay, 5-minute version. I'll give you the elevator pitch, right? Is that what it's still called?
Yeah.
I think that's only 10 seconds, though, so we'll go fast. So, like I said, did pretty much the whole range of the typical American kid sports growing up. Ended up more as a skateboarder, and I rode competitive bike trials, you know, kind of through high school, a little bit into that college range on the bike. But at that point, it's too much damage occurs when you fuck up. I kind of was self-taught with the Olympic lifts. In a very rudimentary fashion at some point in high school, you know, always had been involved in strength training, barbell training in particular. Wasn't necessarily particularly strong, but I could figure things out to a degree. And, you know, what's most frustrating at this point in my life is this is, of course, pre-internet era, so you had to actually go out of your way to find things. It turns out that I lived about an hour away from Jim Schmitz, who is, you know, one of the most accomplished weightlifting coaches in the U.S. And had I known that as a kid, I probably would have found a way to guilt my parents into taking me up there at some point. But anyway, fast forward to age of, I don't know, 20, 21 or something like that, and I was living in Chico, California. Which happened to be where the legendary Rob Wolf had just relocated to from Seattle after realizing that living in Seattle was going to make him blow his brains out because of the cloudy weather. And so just through a weird series of coincidences, I ended up training at the gym he was sharing space with, like a BJJ Muay Thai guy. And he invited me to come train with them, and I kind of looked at what they were doing, which was really early stage CrossFit, so it struck me as kind of goofy, but at the same time kind of appealing because it was a lot of just, you know, athletic movements, and I was like, okay, I'll do this. You know, I had the power rack in my garage and kind of was doing that on my own, but I figured I'd try something different, and that was a chance to kind of get back into have a chance to do weightlifting again, have a facility where I could drop weights and I'll have bars that spin and whatnot. And then shortly thereafter, I ended up moving down to Southern California to train under Mike Bergner, who was my first true weightlifting coach and really my mentor as kind of a future weightlifting coach. So moved back up to the Bay Area where I'm from with my well, at that time was not my wife, but my now wife, Amy, and we opened the facility that we're currently in now in Sunnyvale.
That's amazing. Right. Well, great show.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. All right, let's grab some lunch. Yeah, it's great.
Big gulps, huh?
Yeah. orange whip, three orange whips. All right, well, let's get into some good stuff. The question we were talking about a little offline, why is it that, in your perception, something as, you know, like repetitive movement pattern, like snatch, clean, and jerk, which is really, you know, two movements that you compete in that also happen to be what you're training, have caused so much debate and have so many experts speaking different things? It just seems that, you know, when you have something like, you know, snatch, clean, and jerk, why is it that there's so many different variations? Is it anthropometrical ratios of lifters? Is it coaches? Is this? I mean, it's like every time I turn around, or is it all bullshit?
Well, it's largely bullshit. And I think it's, you have to recognize that this is largely exclusive to the U.S. or, you know, countries in similar situations with regard to the sport of weightlifting. This kind of stuff, discussion and argument and nonsense, really doesn't occur, to my knowledge, in countries that have established successful Olympic weightlifting programs. I think the origin of it here is the general lack of information from reputable sources. In other words, you don't have, like you do in Russia or China, coaches literally with PhDs in weightlifting. You know, the closest you can get here is a, you know, kinesiology degree or an exercise phys degree, which have, it's worse than not having anything to do with weightlifting. It kind of sets you back from understanding weightlifting, you know, just the bases of kind of those educational tracks. But in any case, there's that lack of information from reputable sources, which kind of opens the floodgates for a lot of opinions rather than facts or, you know, experiences, because they're so lacking. So, and then to kind of exacerbate that problem, you have a lack of truly experienced, knowledgeable people to kind of quash that sort of shit, you know, by coming in and getting involved and saying, nope, this is how it is. And it's not that they don't necessarily exist in the U.S. It's that they tend to be people who really have no interest in getting involved in, you know, arguments on the internet. And I wish I could say that I belong to that group as much as possible. I try to stay out of it. But, of course, you know, if you spend more than 5 minutes a day on the internet, which I have to do because that's kind of where my business resides most of the time, you're going to get sucked into that stuff from time to time. But I think it's that combination of lack of information and then a lack of kind of the authority of genuine experts kind of keeping it under control.
Sorry, Greg. Well, yeah, we struggle with the same type of shit, and it's, I don't think it's lack of information. It's too much fucking information, too much static, and an uninformed consumer base just looking up to the fucking sky and saying, okay, which star do I follow? You know, right. Unable to find that North Star.
Well, I mean, I think the harder thing you run into is, and Luke hits it on the head, there's so much information and people don't really have the ability to disseminate it because they don't really have the background to really understand it. So they kind of go to are their kind of gurus, for example, and then, you know, so-and-so says this, and then what they do is they take that information and they run back to this person and they ask them, and it's like, at the end of the day, it's fucking all bullshit. And, yeah. You know, it's kind of like my favorite is at least three times a week, I get somebody forward me something from T Nation about, like, you know, and, you know, little they know that T Nation is a supplement company, and their whole goal is to get you to come to their site and stay on their site long enough that actually read the article where they push the supplements at the end, and then you get to buy the supplements.
Right.
So all of that is just clickbait to get you to buy supplements. It's, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, it's fucking nonsense, but they pay people out the ass. They have some good writers. They have some good information. Mm-hmm. But, like, part of their thing is to start controversy to get people to talk about their stuff. And so at least, like, you know, a couple times a week I get something, and I'm like, dude, it's not as complicated. People are re-spinning the same shit over and over again in an effort to try to get you all stirred up so you think that this is what you have to do. It's right. Like, relax. Stay the course.
And the medium to get your information out is shared. I mean, it's basically social media now, right? So the experts and the fucking jamokes all share the same medium. It's cheap. It's easy. And for you to push information out, and really it's just self-marketing. Like, you're not, maybe you believe it, maybe you don't, but you're just trying to, like you said, clickbait is a great example of that shit. Like, and I fucking hate it when I want to write a solid blog and I got to use some douchebag title, like fucking this trick, you know, will kill you or won't kill you if you do it right. You know, like,
yeah, but 400%. That's the thing is you have to, at some point you have to make the decision on whether or not you want to be a content creator or a marketer. And yeah, there's going to be overlap in this day and age of internet media, but the fact is you have to be one over the other. And if you're going to be a content creator, first and foremost, you have to accept the fact that you're going to not be making as much money as you could, but what you'll get is the respect of the true experts and of the people you actually help. If you're going to be a marketer, you're going to have to accept the fact that, you know, the true experts are going to think you're douchebags. And eventually that's probably going to come out and bite you in the ass, but you will make a bunch of money really quickly. So, you know, it's a frustrating thing, you know, to be stuck in that position, but I would much rather be able to respect myself and not become a millionaire, as long as I can support my family, that is, and, you know, and just sit here with people like you and complain about everyone else.
Is that kind of like one of the messages you wanted to get across in your film, American Weightlifting? You know, just about, like, staying true to the sport, not, like, you know, getting all gimmicky. And
yeah, well, I mean, one of the big pushes for that movie was I wanted to kind of record a little history, because in the last couple years, that history is being really rapidly erased, you know, by all these new people coming in who've never been steeped in the culture. They've never had that experience of actually genuinely being a weightlifter in a weightlifting gym under a weightlifting coach. I kind of hesitate to put it this way, because I don't mean to be insulting to people who just want to try weightlifting and get involved and think it's fun. That's fantastic. I want to encourage that. But there's a big difference between, you know, a weightlifter who came up in a weightlifting gym versus someone who is doing weightlifting in a CrossFit gym, for example. And that's, of course, the most common situation now. You completely miss out on that environment and that culture, and a lot of just the kind of subtleties and intangibles that you can only get in that true weightlifting atmosphere. And that stuff's being lost. And people are kind of just resorting to learning about the sport in a more superficial kind of technical sort of way, rather than as, you know, a true lifestyle. And, you know, I guarantee people are going to call me elitist for saying shit like that, but you know what? It's their fucking loss. Like, if they can't really understand what the problem with that is, then I don't know what to do to help them. And I wanted to really recognize these American coaches who, by and large, are unknown. Which is unfortunate, because the things they've accomplished are huge. We talked before the show started about Jim Schmitz. I think he's coached 10 Olympians. That's more than any other American coach out there, certainly more than me. I've coached precisely zero Olympians, countless, you know, world championship level lifters, you know, national champions, American record holders. You know, and all these coaches I included in that movie were included for very good reasons. They have made really significant contributions to the sport of weightlifting in the U.S. and arguably internationally to some extent. And I wanted to make sure that those guys were celebrated and they were recognized, and that was kind of recorded permanently in some way before it just got completely erased by the revisionist history that's, you know, being written right now on Instagram.
No, you know what? It reminds me of, or when you were saying that, I was thinking about when I went to like a strength symposium a couple years ago, and they brought in Tommy Kono to speak. And he was talking about like in the 50s or something about how he hitchhiked to get to wherever the Olympics were that year, and then competes, wins a medal, and then hitchhikes back home.
I think he was in the Army at that time too.
Yeah, you know, he was training in some like dirt floor basement. I mean, just like the passion and the love for that sport, and like what. You hear a story like that, and you're like, man, you know, like, I'm kind of old school in some of the training I like to do, and, you know, I'm glad you put out that movie, and I can appreciate hearing stories like that from somebody like him, and this, so I can kind of, like, have some of that history to, you know, to the sport of weightlifting.
Yeah, it's really sad, it's really frustrating to kind of see, you know, what's happened kind of to the culture of weightlifting, because it's gotten so diluted. And it's fantastic that it's growing so quickly and growing so much in the U.S. Of course, I'm not going to argue with that. It helps keep me, you know, in a house and wearing clothes and eating food. But that doesn't mean I have to accept and be happy about, you know, the unnecessary changes to the culture and to the mindset. And like you said, there's kind of a increasing diminishment of that, I guess what a lot of people would call old school attitude, which to me is just an attitude of being hardworking, kind of keeping your mouth shut, respecting the people who have come before you, and not being an asshole, which, I mean, I don't know. Those all seem pretty great to me. I would love it if more people would embrace those things.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't pretend to be something that you're not, you know? I mean...
Yeah, just because I had a guy... I just have to vent on this real quick, and it's fairly germane to the conversation, but I made some posts the other day, and that's one of the frustrating things. You can post something in clearly worded English, and you're going to get interpretations that range from a little bit off to fucking ridiculous, but I posted something about basically... you know, fraudulent misrepresentation of yourself on the internet as a coach when you don't even coach any athletes, for example. And some guy said, oh, yeah, you know, I love what you do and all, but you can't publish all this information and then expect people not to steal it from you. And, like, that just struck me on so many levels as just insane. I mean, so basically he was telling me that it's my own fault for publishing information that it's being plagiarized, which wasn't the comment wasn't even about people plagiarizing me and anyone else, which happens all the time. But to have someone tell you that you can't put information out there and then not expect people to give credit for it, it's like, no, I mean, that's what there's a whole system of citation that exists from multiple organizations for exactly this purpose. You know, to give credit to information that's been developed by other people's in your own work. It's not that fucking confusing.
It kind of reminds me of the girl that goes out to the bar who dresses up a little bit, has a drink, and then something bad happens to her, and they're like, well, you know, she wanted to get raped. Look the way she was dressed. You're like, come on, dude. Like, yeah. is that really how you're thinking? So, like, by actually putting together good information to put out and not only kind of help yourself, but to help other people in this kind of constant fight to educate. But now if it gets stolen, it gets pinched, or if this idea gets taken, then it's your fault for putting it out there.
I mean, get your head around that one.
Well, we deal with this a little bit in that it seems as if the information you put on the internet leads to such massive butthurt. It's like I can't even describe it. Like, for example, I called somebody out on something. And the guy was, like, so fucking butthurt by it. And I even said to the guy, if we were in person, you wouldn't even take this personally. You would listen to me. I would tell you. You'd shake your head, and we'd go on. But you're making this so much of a bigger fucking situation because the sensitivity level and the amount of butthurt on the internet is so fucking high. Like, it just blows my fucking mind.
Did you use bro? Because you got to use bro to make it legit.
Or bro. Oh, bro. I'm not your fucking bro.
You know what? If you don't know me.
Yeah, but it was pretty interesting, and like finally I just fucking like let it go. But I'm like, dude, the amount, like I don't know when. I mean, it's almost like you would almost think that the internet would almost make people less sensitive and like more callous and like kind of just very, very cold. But no, I believe the internet allows people to voice their inner sensitivity with this like cocoon and this shield of not getting fucking kicked in the balls or punched in the face.
It amplifies
That's what it is the social mediums have basically just proven what a lot of us suspected for years, that people by and large are just obnoxious fucking assholes. And the only reason they don't act like that in real life is because they don't want to be picking up their teeth off the ground. Which is a sad comment on the state of the fucking world, but I'm also really cynical curmudgeon.
Yeah, I mean, they were fucked.
So, Greg, I want to go back to something maybe we can get some context. One thing that, you know, John arms all of us when we go out on our seminars, I mean, we get the same fucking pushback. If there is going to be pushback, there's only like a handful of things that we get popped on. And we talk about using OLIFs and like, hey, we're not coaching OLIFters, you know, and
Oh, you're talking about like how we like, because we only teach then, the power movements.
Yeah, every once in a while somebody
bitches.
Somebody stands up and, you know, they're like, hey, I'm a weightlifter, and this isn't how my coach taught me. Yeah. And then we always like back them down. Whoa, 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 whoa! Listen. There's golfers, and then there's golfers, and this is one of John's things.
No, you fucked it up. So Fred Tedeschi, who is our strength, or who is our head trainer at Cal, was also the trainer at the Chicago Bulls, and he was like with Jordan and all those guys. Oh, you've never heard of him?
No. Is Chicago a big sports city?
Yeah, they do mostly. What are you sweeping the ice?
If
the Cubs are going to win the World
Series.
5 minutes
with Phil Jackson and Mike Ditka, I'd be pretty fucking psyched.
So Fred was the head trainer, and we had to go play in this charity golf thing, and like fucking Fred goes out there, and he's like a scratch golfer, and like we're out there just fucking hacking it up, and I see him playing. I was like Fred, I didn't know you were so good, and he kind of looked at me, and he said, there's two types of people in this world. There's golfers and there's people that play golf. I'm a golfer. And so, it was the most arrogant thing I've ever fucking heard, but I've extrapolated, like, there's two types of people in this world. There's Olympic weightlifters and there's people that Olympic weightlift. Absolutely. And, few people are Olympic weightlifters.
So to wind it back, thanks, John, for, putting me in my place. And we were talking about it a few minutes ago, how would you compare and contrast, for lack of a better term, the life cycle of a weightlifter, someone who's brought up grassroots to people who Olympic weightlift and are almost uninformed or delusional about their status, much like there's golfers and there are those who play golf?
Huh. Well, I mean, the big thing with weightlifting is that it is a relatively obscure, small sport in this country at least. But typically what I would suggest is that a weightlifter is going to come up from a young age where they are fairly impressionable, and even if they're obstinate little shits like most people at that age are, they are at least receptive to the idea, the possibility that they don't know everything, and they are working with a coach who they respect. Doesn't mean they never argue with them and they never have any friction with them, but they respect first and foremost that they will listen to, that they will, genuinely believe in what that coach is having them do. And, they will follow it to the letter, and they develop this this sense of commitment to not only this physical activity, but to the lifestyle that surrounds it. In other words, it's just like the golfer story that John corrected for you. you know, a weight, being a weightlifter requires literally constructing your life around the sport of weightlifting. In other words, you know, your training and your restoration is the priority in your life. That doesn't mean you don't have other things going on, but it means you make those other things work around weightlifting rather than trying to fit weightlifting around other things. You know, you're not going out on Friday, Saturday night, or Wednesday, Thursday, Monday, Tuesday night. You know, you're not going hiking with your buddies on Sunday because it's sunny out. You're at home, you know, doing contrast or, you know, getting massage or whatever else is going on, you know, anything that supports that training. Someone who does weightlifting, and I just will preface this by saying there's nothing wrong with this. You're not a bad person. You just have different goals and priorities. Someone who just does weightlifting is the opposite, where they're going to fit weightlifting in where it's convenient for them. They're going to kind of do it as long as it's convenient and it's enjoyable and it's entertaining to them. And for a lot of people, that's a really brief period of time, or it's a longer period of time because the frequency with which they do it is so low. You know, the guys who will do a snatch workout once a month or so, and then, you know, email me and wonder why they're not getting any better. You know, whereas the weightlifter, it's you live it. That's what matters to you most. And again, that's kind of what's missing from this new kind of internet breed of experts, is that they've never had that experience. They've kind of been looking in through the window and picking up pieces here and there and trying to reassemble them into the whole, and they're missing too much of the glue that kind of holds that stuff together. And I mean, if that's not an incredible metaphor for you, I don't know. I can't think of that.
Would you say then at the end of that life cycle, and you know, this is also maybe something else to
do. But I mean, it's
Okay. That lifestyle comment reminds me of a big point that I missed, and that is, it goes back to kind of the idea of craftsmen of all kind. You know, whether it's a carpenter or whatever, you know, the best craftsmen in the world have always learned from the master craftsman that they apprenticed under. In other words, they had a mentor that they worked under, genuinely worked under, not sent a few emails to asking like, okay, well, how do I make a dub joint? You know, whatever the case is. And so they really lived that lifestyle, and they saw how it worked by someone who, you know, truly knew what they were doing and was truly 100% immersed in it. And then they themselves were immersed in that life. And that's how that stuff gets passed on coach to coach and, you know, coach to athlete. And then typically what you're going to see is, you know, a true weightlifter is going to remain involved in the sport indefinitely, whether they become coaches or, you know, officials, or in some way they're going to remain involved in the sport rather than having this kind of passing interest for a year or two and then move on to the next thing.
That was kind of what I was going to get to. It's like, I guess as you immerse yourself in that lifestyle, you will gravitate towards a mentor who will proverbially pass a torch or and almost anchor you into that lifestyle.
Well, it really goes with any type of like successful mastery of sport. I mean, you look at like the best people in the world. I mean, they just don't do it on occasion. They do it every day. It's all they do. If you want to run in the Olympics, you go to the track 7 days a week, and everything you're doing is going to that goal. I mean, same stuff for us. I mean, you know, with my previous life, I mean, everything that I did, I mean, it was such a weird thing when I retired, when I can probably never told anybody this, but like I ended up getting injured, and like I came home, had surgery, and I remember like when I made the decision to retire, I just kind of like laid in bed. You know, I'd always get up at like pretty early and go train. I just kind of laid in bed till like 10 or 11 and slept in. And I was like, what am I going to do today? And I was like, nothing. There's nothing I have to do. Because for my entire life, every single thing that I did in my life was moving towards a singular goal of athletic performance. It was every meal. It was every site. It was everything. It literally it drives you in every way. And then all of a sudden it ends. And like a lot of guys just go to the bar and get fucked up. They go buy a pound of blow and a bunch of hookers, and they just fucking blow it all. And then they fucking are like, oh, fuck, what did I do? Because they don't know how to cope with it.
Gotta go weightlift. Yeah.
Well, and I think like, I mean, you know this obviously way better than I do, but I think people don't understand that, you know, with football is it's not just, you know, field time, game time. I mean, you guys are sitting there studying playbooks, having team meetings, you know, all these, your whole life is consumed by that stuff. It's not just showing up on Thursday and Sunday to have a game and then you go home and fuck around the rest of the week.
No, I mean, it's a full-time commitment, and like, you live it. I remember one of the greatest moments of my life was all of a sudden after you, like, the playoff ends, and like, you know, you either lose, you win that last game, and they call you in on Monday for that final meeting, and they have like the exit meeting. And I always remember the coach was like, "You guys have been pretty regimented. Like, don't go crazy. I'm gonna let you guys go, but like, I don't want to see anybody doing burnouts out of the parking lot. I don't need a helicopter flying over for fucking pickups to take you to the, just like, ease it in." And literally, dude, they'd be like, "You guys are free." And you would watch grown men sprint out of the building like fucking Starsky and Hutch over the hood into their car going sideways. Just like, and I'm like, "Where are you guys going? Home? I just want to get there as fast as I can." And it's like, you know, something that is always been like the thing I always loved about Olympic weightlifting is, playing football, and I, you know, we always used it, and part of the reason, and we'll get into it a little bit later, but you know, Luke alluded to it. Like, we teach the power movements at our seminar because I don't necessarily believe that I should have to be able to teach the full variances of the lift for people that are using it for athletic training. But the thing that I always really enjoy, especially about Olympic weightlifting, and this goes back, my strength coach in college is a guy named Todd Rice, and Todd had gone over to the Eastern Bloc and been to Russia and all over in Bulgaria, and had actually gone over and apprenticed under some of those coaches and brought us back all these VHS tapes of all these guys kind of training. And the thing that always blew me away, and the way that I know I'm actually watching actual Olympic weightlifters training in a facility for Olympic weightlifters, is as everybody is, as each person is lifting, everybody is sitting around like with the same fucking distraught look on their face, where it looks like somebody has fucking removed my soul. I'm completely fucking destroyed, and they're just usually sitting on like a bench with their forearms on their knees, just kind of staring like at the person, and like they celebrate with like the wins and the losses. And like the coolest part about these videos that Rice brought us back is, I mean, these dudes were like literally sitting in the back in like a squatted position, smoking cigarettes, like laughing and joking, and then the guy would get up and he'd put it out with his Olympic shoe, go over, and the guy would be wearing like no shirt, no socks, no underwear, just like a pair of sweatpants and Oli shoes, and the dude would come in and like, you know, snatch like 170 kilos like it's nothing. And it was like, you know, seeing those training halls and just seeing everybody training at the same time, going around, and like, you know, like because they live and they train with these guys in such a intense manner, it's like they live and die with each and every lift. And I think like, that's how you can, whenever I'm watching anything or any clip on the internet, I can always tell whether or not it's like real Olympic lifting or this like made for TV version of Olympic lifting that we get to see so much on Instagram and the internet. And it's always like how big the group is, the look on people's faces, what's on the bar, the amount of fucking chalk on the floor. I mean, just like the sweat on people. And it's just like you get to see a little bit of that. So that's always cool for me.
Yeah, I mean, I have by far one of the nicest weightlifting facilities in the country. I mean, easily. And honestly, I mean, daily, I kind of wish, like, man, I kind of would love to close this place down and go back to training in a garage like I did at Mike Bergner's house. Because to me, that really encapsulated everything that weightlifting is truly about to me, and you know, which is the facility didn't really matter. The equipment didn't matter so much. As long as you had enough weights, you had a bar that spun reasonably well, and you had a relatively flat surface to lift on, you were fine. You know, what mattered was how much you loved it, how much you were willing to put yourself through to make, you know, tiny amounts of measurable progress over long periods of time with, you know, no one watching. I mean, when I started, it was, the internet was still relatively young, you know, Instagram didn't exist, Twitter didn't exist, Facebook didn't exist. And so there wasn't even the opportunity to be like, all right, I'm going to post every single lift I do today. Preferably get some nice butt shots, you know, take pictures of my new fancy socks, you know, whatever the case is. It was, you're here to train, shut your fucking mouth and do the work. And then if you put in that work and you really truly prove that you are dedicated to this, then maybe a few years down the line, you might get some recognition.
The other one is, you can only spot Olympic weightlifters by how disgusting their shoes are. So that was something, like, I had one pair of shoes and had them for like 6 years. And I remember like I got a new pair, and I carried with them. I carried them around in my bag for like 2 years before I finally was like, "Man, okay, I got to retire these and put these new ones in." And like, I remember seeing like the dude. We had a guy that played football with us in college, a guy named Chris Marie, and he was from France, and he was an Olympic weightlifter from France, and he came over and came to Berkeley and decided to try out for the football team. And the dude was fucking beyond strong, but his Olympic weightlifting shoes, he had duct taped together.
Yeah. So like, oh, and like, I competed at this last Nationals with athletic tape holding the toes of the soles of my shoes on, because they were falling off. You know, the first 4 inches was completely separated from the.
But that superstition, it's like that superstition and being like, dude, I can't retire these things. My best lifts have been in these shoes. There's no way I'm gonna fucking retire these things. Which is like the same shit in football. Like, I played with guys that wanted brand new shoes every game. I wore two pairs of shoes the entire season. And I remember, like, the end of the year, they were like, "Hey, you're going to have to, like, do something with those." I'm like, "Don't touch my fucking shoes." And they're like, "But they're broken down." I'm like, no, dude. They're just where I like them. I'll get two new ones next year. And, like, it's always interesting when you go in and people are like, "Oh, you know, I have 27 fucking Nike Romulos and every color to match my outfit for the day." I'm like, "Oh, God, fuck you."
Yeah, buy a snowmobile.
That's very Don Johnson, Harley Davidson, and a Marlboro Man of you, John.
Remember, dude, I'm telling you.
What's the story with your fucking boots, Harley?
He's like, "Get off my boots." I'll tell you, this is so funny. I love that movie so much.
That's a great movie.
That movie made me want to buy or get a motorcycle, and I actually got a motorcycle. It was obviously not a bitchin' fucking shackle down FXR like he wrote in that movie, but it was a 1976 Honda 750 Super Sport that was sparkly root beer with an orange stripe and was ugly. But that actually made me want to ride a motorcycle, so I do love that movie.
So I'm very impressionable too when it comes to movies.
Oh, let's talk. I know Greg, you're a connoisseur of movies. What would you say is, give us your top five favorite movies, if you can do it, if it's even at all possible. Comedies,
yeah,
everything.
I don't know if it's possible, but I think I would have to say, well, let me give you the best sports movies first, because that'll at least ease into the topic. It's got to be Vision Quest, Hoosiers, and Rocky. I mean, Rocky's kind of a given, but Hoosiers and Vision Quest, I can watch those, weekly and still get pumped. Although, actually, one time I was on a plane going to Nationals, it was either last year or the year before, and I was watching Vision Quest on the iPad, and the flight attendant kind of looks at me, he's like, "What are you watching?" I was like, "Vision Quest." "What's that?" I was like, "Oh, it's this great movie about a wrestler and this and that." And so she leans over and looks down at the iPad. And, of course, it happened to be the scene where Madonna is singing on stage in the bar. And I was like, fuck. Oh. This lady thinks I'm, like, watching an 80s Madonna movie right now. I'm just lying about it.
You're watching Desperately Seeking Susan. I know.
Yeah, exactly. Son of a bitch. I think probably the when people ask me what my favorite movie is, I think I always come back to Requiem for a Dream. As being just like one of the greatest movies ever made, just with regard to everything. I mean, like the camera and editing work, the scoring of it, the acting, even the subject matter. I mean, it's a Hubert Selby book, and it's like the most disturbing, depressing movie you'll ever see, but it's incredible.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw that movie once, and I was probably one of the more depressing movies I've ever seen in my life. So, yeah, it was when you said that, I was like, are we thinking of the same movie? Because how did you go from Vision Quest to Requiem for a Dream?
I know for a fact, I haven't been
ready for a meet, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, fuck this meet, I'm just going to go do a bunch of blow and kill myself.
I have my appreciation for film is only like one or two layers deep, like clearly because I like the Fast and Furious series.
It's not real. I mean, they're not really a series. They're documentaries.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah, series of documentaries. Yeah,
they're documentaries of the ability of the film industry to remake the same fucking lame movie seven times and still get all the money.
Hey, come on, best line in the movie. And you know what? They're going to make three more of them, and here's the funny part. I'm going to go see them all.
I'm fucking, you know, hey, I am.
There's a reason they keep making them, and it's not because they're stupid.
and then the best is the last one we saw. We're like, oh, my God, they flew was it they parachuted those cars on the road and we're like, oh my god. So we asked Andy Stuff about it and he's like, no, it's impossible.
Yeah, Andy was on our last podcast and, you know, he's well versed in that type of shit. And we're like, what are the odds you could parachute 7 cars onto the same route and they all land in the same spot? And he's like, you guys are retarded.
I find it odd that you guys actually had to consult an expert on that.
Well, I'm still questioning its
veracity.
Well, but it was more like Andy was there, the opportunity was there, and you know, Greg knows Andy, so anytime you can put Andy in a situation where he's gonna like give you the straight fucking play and then land a blow on you the backside, you fucking have to go.
So, yeah, that's fair.
So it was good. All right, so what? My other question about using the Olympic movements for sport, specific training, because, I mean, there's two types of people, like we said. There's obviously weightlifters, and there's people who like to Olympic weightlift. You know, when we go on and we work with athletes, they always ask us, well, what about the Olympic movements? Do you teach them or do you use them? I'm like, yeah, I think they're great, but we don't necessarily teach full variances of lifts, and we always get this idea of, like, well, why not? You know, and I'm like, well, we squat twice a week, we pull heavy, we pull dynamic, and the way I look at the Olympic movements is it's a form of dynamic pulling. And, you know, with as much squatting as we're doing, I, you know, don't need to do more because it takes away from the time that I get to work on all the other stuff.
And well, that's exactly it right there. That's the key.
You know, and if your goal is snatch, clean, and jerk, and, you know, and that's all I want to do, then you know what, then there's a definite mode for that. But if your goal is to increase athletic performance, then you know what, and you have a task specific, like, hey, I need to make you ready for play football or do anything else. Like, there's just there's so much to work on. I mean, mm-hmm. It's almost like this idea of like reverse engineering, where you know you look at the demands of the game, and then you look at the individual, and you assess them, and then you figure out what's missing to get you where you have to go, and then we have to work on all this stuff. And if we focus on snatch, clean, and jerk exclusively. You know, which is, you know, bilateral hip hinging and this kind of repetitive movement pattern in a sport that always has you on one leg and you can go through all these different stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm like, just fucking trust me. Just fucking trust me, dude. Just trust me.
And I think so, people envision this utopia of like 16-year-old kids who just acquire Olympic weightlifting and make the lift super effective and potent training stimulus in a week. Like,
oh, yeah.
You just, from coaching firsthand, people just don't like have no appreciation for being in a, you know, 2,000 square foot facility with 30 high school kids and fucking 8 barbells, and like already it's a fucking recipe for disaster. You're outnumbered 30-1, and it's just like, if we can just get them to jump with a barbell, make the pull dynamic, yeah. we're starting to breed a little bit of success with the time that we have.
Yeah, I mean, we you know, for us, like I remember with the exact story Luke's talking about, like going in and just being like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to vertical jump with weight in your hand. It's called Olympic lifting. Mm-hmm. And like, they were like trying to, like, I'm like, let's just, you know, like, let's fucking pretend that we're not, you know, in fucking Bulgaria and Russia and I got a gun to your head that I'm going to fucking blow your brains out if you don't get this next lift. Like, let's fucking be realistic about what we're doing. And I think the big thing, and I'm sure you run into this more than anybody, is people, one, aren't realistic about what they are, who they can do, and how it all fits. I mean, I'm sure you've seen some really gifted Olympic weightlifters, and when you do some basic testing, like, yeah, the guy's got like a fucking 40-inch standing vertical. And you're like, you know what, that guy can pull the shit out of the bar. He's pretty explosive. And then you test somebody else that has like an 18-inch standing vertical. And you're like, yeah, we're going to be able to make some incremental improvement, but I don't really ever see you getting a chance to go to the Olympics.
Have you ever considered jogging?
I mean, because that's like, you know, that's something like that is pretty, like, kind of blows my mind a little bit in Olympic weightlifting circles, where there's, you know, in the NFL, or more importantly in football, if you're not 6'5 and pretty big and strong and fast, there's a good chance you're probably not going to be able to get a chance to go play offensive line in the NFL. Like,
sorry, Tex.
Yeah, like, well, if you fucking run a 4.3, 4.4, like, as fast as you can, rotate your upper body to catch a fucking football from a 50-yard dude throwing a bomb, there's a good chance you're not going to be playing receiver. And I think, like, enough people realize that, like, yeah, unless my dad or my brother or somebody in my lineage, like, was able to do this and I have a pretty good chance to be able to do this, I probably should give it. Whereas it seems like Olympic weightlifting, people are, like, I'm going to go pick this thing up, and in a couple, and you know, if I do this for a couple weeks, I'll be able to go compete in the fucking Olympics.
Here's a perfect story to illustrate this point. This was probably 5 years ago. We had a woman come in who must have been mid-50s, considerably overweight, totally immobile, 100% unathletic. And I think she was coming in for just some, you know, fitness stuff, right? And she said, you know, I went on YouTube last night and I watched some videos of Olympic weightlifting, and I don't see why I couldn't go to the Olympics in that. Dead serious. And it's like, how do you even respond to that level of ignorance?
Laughter?
I needed her money, but... I think going back to John's point is that the biggest... And this is the thing that no one likes to hear, because it makes them feel bad about themselves and feel hopeless, but hey, that's life. The biggest thing in being a successful coach is recruiting the right fucking people. You cannot, you know, what's the saying? You can't make a racehorse out of a fucking jackass. You can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Like, you have to have the right material to begin with. But the other part of that too, and which is what is sorely missing in weightlifting in this country especially, is the proper timing of athlete development. In other words, you take gymnastics. Those kids are starting at 5 years old, 6 years old. And there's very regimented, systematic development, you know, across 10 levels from compulsory to optional, blah, blah, blah. If you took a kid who wasn't necessarily incredibly athletically endowed, you know, his parents were librarians or, you know, whatever, they squatted on and off the couch and that's about it. If you start that kid at 10 years old, learning technique when they're most, they're able to develop motor patterns the best. And then you move on to, you know, developing speed and explosiveness, you know, at ages, you know, 12 to 14. And then, you know, as they start reaching sexual maturity, you start introducing more, you know, strength training and all these different things. And you have this properly timed, you know, staged, systematic, long-term development, you can make that kid a pretty damn good weightlifter. And what's happening here, and which is the source of much frustration for both athletes and coaches, is that people are finding the sport at age 25, if we're lucky. Usually it's more like 30 or 35, and with no athletic background or very limited athletic background in a completely unrelated activity, you know, like being a triathlete or something like that, that, you know, no mobility, no explosiveness, no strength, and then wondering why they can't win the national championships in 1 year of training.
So do we have an idea of why? I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I, like, we just, actually, I think, on Facebook I saw, and I can't remember the guy's website, it was like, you know, some Olympic lifting guru guy, but he posted that Russian dude was cleaning and jerking like 200 and fuck, it was like 555 pounds.
Yeah, I just watched the video.
Yeah, the guy was in black. I mean, we literally watched it, and the dude literally cleaned it up. And like, dude, the bar hit, and literally the dude was standing up before the bar even landed on his shoulders. I mean, he stood up like it was fucking nothing.
Well, he's been squatting 500 pounds since he was 16.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. Like, people see that, and he makes it look so effortless. And I'm like, all right, so you have to remember, like, the system that these guys grew up in. I'm like, and, like, the more interesting part is, and somebody asked me this once. They said, you know, do you think that there's a correlation between athleticism and Olympic weightlifting? Does it build athleticism? And I kind of like had to really kind of think about it a little bit. And I was like, you know, I've seen incredible athletes that were really good Olympic lifters. And I've seen Olympic lifters that were not great athletes that could Olympic lift. But I've never seen Olympic lifting turn a bad athlete into a good athlete.
No, because you have to be a certain level of good.
Yeah.
To be successful in Olympic lifting, like any sport. I mean, you have to have certain physical qualities inherently. And that's the thing, is that's why these sports at the elite level self-select the proper athletes.
Do you think that all this is basically genetic, or do you think that there's a time window from like day one up until the age of 3 or 4 years old that is some form of athletic development that kids are missing? I mean, I have a couple theories on this, but
I think it's a combination of both for sure. I mean, you take the classic example I'll always use is, you know, people who scoff at the idea of genetic predisposition to physical traits, which to me is just fucking mind-boggling. But, okay, so if Richard Simmons trained exactly like Schwarzenegger, same drugs and everything, you know, would they end up looking and performing the exact same? Or, you know, Richard Simmons and Usain Bolt? The answer to anyone who's reasonably intelligent is no. Yeah. There are genetic qualities, and in particular the speed-related qualities are the big ones. Speed and explosiveness, those are very much genetic. Sure. Strength can be developed to a much greater degree. Mobility can be developed, especially if it started at a young age and preserved. I mean, every kid is mobile. That really the issue is preserving that mobility, as the kid gets older. So, yeah, if you intervene at the right age and you exploit those periods of time in a kid's development when they're most apt to accelerate. It's just like learning a language, right? Sure. A 4 to 8 year old learns another language very easily and very quickly and can become fluent, versus, you know, a 40 year old over the same period of time is still going to sound like a dumbass trying to speak that language. The body is just, not being able to find the right word I want, but you're capable of developing certain traits optimally at different stages of your physical development. And so that's what a sport like gymnastics exploits, which is more successful in this country because there's opportunities, versus weightlifting, where in these successful countries, they are able to take advantage of that systematic long-term development. So by the time when a 26 to 28 year old weightlifter is at the world championships, they've already been training for 10 to 15 years. Versus we have that same age weightlifter, they might have been training for 3 to 5 years. And so the fact that we're behind shouldn't really be that surprising.
So do you think that the surge of popularity long term will help? Or will create the opportunity to start developing kids?
Not this generation. What it's going to do is all these fucking Johnny-come-lately kind of Olympic weightlifters that Greg caters to, you know, these guys that's like 40 years old that want to be an Olympic weightlifter, these fuckers happen to have
kids.
What I'm saying. So now they're going to see their missed opportunity.
And then we'll create and that then 10 to 12 create, phase. Yeah.
So it's going to be actually one or two generations.
So America's later. Coming back.
Yo, I've said this, and Greg, you might scoff at this, but I fucking firmly believe, and we've said this at seminar after seminar, that all of a sudden, like 20 years from now, we're going to have a whole fucking resurgence in the Olympics, or all these like fucking high dominant athletes in all these kind of obscure sports, and people are going to be like, wow, how did you get in this? Like, you know, my mom and dad went to this gym, and they fucking kind of put me in the corner, and I got up kind of doing this stuff, and I just kind of grew into it. I was kind of raised in this environment, and it's kind of I'm glad that it's happening in that way, because it's exactly what happens. And people always ask me, well, how come all these NFL players have NFL kids that play in the NFL? And I'm like, well, because when you go to the training facility, guys on off days or on like, you know, certain days or after games, whatever, they bring their kids in the locker room. Like, kids are at practice during training camp, and like those little kids who sees their dad out there playing is around it, and they grow up in it, and they see the importance. Their dad takes them to the gym and they do all these things, opposed from the dad who was an accountant or a fucking dentist. But like, if your whole life is an NFL player and you have your little mini me with you at all times, he eats every meal. I remember Dave Diaz-Infante's little boy would come all the time. And I remember, he was like, hey, Dad, when are we going to get our protein shake? And he's like, make sure you put the creatine in there. Yeah. And, like, his little boy was, like, 5 or 6, and he was like, no, we take our protein shakes. We have to. We got to get ready. And, like, his whole mindset was, like, moving that. And then all of a sudden these kids grow up, and they've been indoctrinated and do it. They've been, exposed to it for so many years that it just becomes second nature. And this is what we do. Whereas for a lot of people, and especially now with the, you know, now there's fucking 10 to 12, 13,000 CrossFit gyms where people have barbells, bumpers, and all this. I mean, it's just giving you know, it's creating places. And as I've gone and done more and more research on athletic development for kids, the one thing that is universally true is opportunity. If you provide opportunity to your kids to do something at a young age, they will exploit it. Like, so my little girls, I have twin girls. They've been doing gymnastics since they were about 2.5 or 3. And my one daughter's pretty tall and lanky, not nearly as coordinated as my other daughter. My other daughter's in, like, the hyper group. They, like, basically separated them. And they're like, well, she has a chance. She should just be having fun here. And they literally separated them even before they were 4 years old. So now they're in two different classes. But for the fourth birthday, I got them bicycles. So they've been on balance bikes. And so we're out there riding the bikes. And our neighbor kids come down. And he's the same age, the brother. And then he has a little brother who's, like, 2. And the little two-year-old brother is so good on his fucking little scooter Razor. It's crazy how good the kid is. And I was, like, watching him tear it up the other day. And the mom's like, yeah, I don't know why he's so good. You know, his brother wasn't as good. And I was like, well, when did you buy him a scooter? She's like, well, I got him for him when he was, like, 3. And I was like, is that his brother's scooter? She's like, yeah, that was the one that he grew out of. So we just had it around, and he just jumped on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's opportunity. You provided opportunity by just having the scooter there. And now the little brother sees his older brother doing it, and the kid's fucking tearing it up.
Well,
like,
yeah,
that's all it is. It's just opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it's both. It's exposure first and opportunity second. And that's why we have great football players and great basketball players and great baseball players, is because you have from day one of a kid's life, they're exposed to these sports. That is what we do. You know, when I was a kid, my dad watched baseball. He played baseball. You know, he played hockey in college. You know, he played all these different things. That's what we're familiar with. And then you're familiar with the sport. You have people that you look up to, these other athletes, coaches, whoever. But then you have opportunity to participate, you know, through club sports, through school sports. They're everywhere. I mean, it's hard not to play baseball or soccer or football. As a boy growing up in this country. With weightlifting, what we're now seeing is increased exposure. So like you said, this new generation of kids seeing their parents do it, their older siblings do it, but then increased opportunity too. There are more and more facilities now that have provided the opportunity to snatch and clean and jerk. And so you have to have both of those things to take this obscure, impoverished sport and make it something that's familiar but also viable. You have to be able to provide opportunities for kids to continue long term. There have to be potential college scholarship opportunities and all these things like that, because right now it is 100% a convenience sport. A kid may get into it in high school, but you know what? Their parents don't give a shit about weightlifting. Their parents want them to pay for their own college. So if they can get a football scholarship, not even being a particularly good football player, they're going to jump on that, and weightlifting is going to fall by the wayside, even if they could have been a tremendous weightlifter and only a mediocre football player, because that's the opportunities that are present.
So, Greg, there was one of my teammates at the Chiefs, getting Boomer Grigsby. Boomer's probably about – he's probably close to 6 feet, probably about 225, 230 pounds. Ran like a 4.640. He had like – I think he was over like a 34-inch vert, but we were in the weight room lifting, and I watched him basically – muscle clean 405 with metal plates, and he kind of did this like little bastard push press and then brought it back down and set it back on the ground and like looked over and was like, hey, was that okay? Was that pretty good clean? And I remember like looking at him and I was like, yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, literally like slight bend in the knee, just basically just fucking horsed it up and like push pressed it.
Yeah.
And I like remember going back and like, Boomer, I think he would have won the American Open with that lift.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, so like there's a guy like that. And then he actually came to our seminar, and probably one of the fucking best moments of our life was we were teaching a seminar. Boomer was like, you know, just kind of out of the NFL, came in, and he wanted to like hang out a little bit. So he's at the seminar, and like all of a sudden we cut for break, and there's a set of rings, and he like kind of looks up at the rings, and he fucking jumps up on the rings and like proceeds to do this fucking ring routine. And like all the people in the gym just like stop, you know, because like the rings are like this final level you've reached.
The final level of athleticism.
Well, it's going to do. Like, oh my God. He literally fucking busts out this ring routine, goes to like an iron cross and does like a backflip and fucking lands it. And like the people are like coming over and like hugging him with tears. And he's like, what's going on? And I was like, dude,
seen these before. These are kind
right? of. Right. And he was like, and then somebody was like, dude, like where? And he's like, yeah, my mom owned a gymnastics studio when I was a kid, and I used to go there to hit on the chicks, and I was a national-level trampoline gymnast, and I used to fuck around on the rings a little bit, but then I got into playing football and went and had a scholarship and played in the NFL. I mean, literally, dude, and I was like, Boomer, you could probably be pretty good at this CrossFit thing. He's like, yeah, those people are kind of weird. He's like, yeah, they wanted to hug me after I got up on the rings. I don't want any fucking part of that. But, I mean, case in point, here's a dude who, just had opportunity because his mom owned a gymnastics studio, got into weightlifting, I mean, all these other things. And, I mean, I even told him, like, Boomer, you ever thought about doing Olympic weightlifting? He's like, oh, not really. I'm like, because what you did there, that was pretty fucking impressive. And he's like, maybe. But, I mean, like, there's genetic freaks out there walking around. The problem is they're just not doing Olympic weight.
They're in the NFL.
Yeah. I tell the story about one of the guys I played with. I watched him fucking rep, like 555 for, like, I think it was a set of 8 on the bench. Like, it was fucking nothing. It took, like, 4 seconds. He was like, bam, bam, bam. And then his point, and then he, like, kind of, like, stood up, and he was like, huh. He's like, oh, I really haven't lifted weights in 6 months. I'm kind of surprised I was able to do that. And I was like, this motherfucker. I was like, and that's where I think, like, the internet has no fucking concept of, like, the strength and size and athleticism of people, because there's no way for them, like, they see it on TV and they get on there and they try to, like, relate themselves to it. And I'm like, dude, I played with guys that were so big and strong that, like, I firmly believe that they could have, like, you know, if you were driving your car, you might not win that fucking battle. And then, like, you know, I played with these dudes, and, like, they always asked me, like, I'm like, dude, I was a smaller athletic guy. I was, like, a technique dude who was, like, fucking out there winning. And they were like, really? I'm like, yeah, I'm not fucking, and I think they think I'm fucking with them. But I'm like, you know, a lot of these, you know, and the internet has given rise to, like, you know, just a whole bunch of people that just don't fucking know, because, one, they never did it, they never trained anybody to do it, and they think they know about it, so all they need is a URL. And, like, at the end of the day, I'm like, dude, like, the best, you know, your fucking secret squirrel program of unilateral and this and all this other bullshit, it doesn't fucking matter, because you can take somebody and give them your program, train them, personally do it, monitor every macronutrient, do all these other things, and they won't get a sniff compared to the kid who's never fucking done this, who's at home eating Pop-Tarts and Cheetos, who just happens to fucking grow and stand there and all of a sudden fucking explode. I'm like, dude, there's just some severe discrepancies in terms of athletic ability and just, like, all in all ability to do these sports. Well, and I think, like, that's the hard part with this.
Yeah, I mean, the related problem to that is the ability of people to go on the internet, watch these videos of these, you know, crazy athletic feats, and it was specific to weightlifting, these huge lifts or these kind of obscure lift variations. People get these ideas in their head like, well, hey, this guy clean and jerks 245, so if I want to clean and jerk 245, I need to train like he does. Not understanding the fact that that guy trains this way now, but he sure as shit didn't do it when he started 10 or 15 years ago. And there is a very clear, you know, logical progression. And so these people with zero experience, zero foundation and just general athletic ability are trying to train like elite weightlifters without building that foundation that even makes that possible. So, you know, irrespective of their genetic predisposition, they're completely jumping the gun and going at it totally backwards, and it's completely counter. It's not even not going to work very well. It's actually counterproductive. It's holding them back from what they could potentially be doing.
And I watch guys all the time with the like the Kanchi method, for example, and I see beginners doing all these variations of the lift, and I'm like, dude, why don't you just learn to fucking back squat? Like, why don't we just keep this fucking basic and, like, let me, you know, and I, even our amateur template, the one that we use, which pretty much every single person that walks through the door, no matter who comes and finds us, it's 5 basic lifts. You're going to squat, you're going to press, you're going to deadlift, you're going to power clean, you're going to bench press. And then once you get really good at those 5 movements, we might add some variations once you get, like, it just blows my mind that I think, like, people go and, like, a beginner will go and find the most fucking complex, most deep, like, fucking craziest programs, and they'll look and they'll be like, oh, that's the one that's going to get me. And I'm like, that's so fucking backwards thinking. I would think, like, I'm a beginner. Let me find the most basic shit. And as I get a little bit better, I might need – I mean, but it's – I think it all goes back to this.
The beginning basic programs are not glamorous.
No, they're not sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Greg, it sounds like, I mean, it sound, you've been pretty insightful on all this shit. Do you, like, where, let's say I am a beginner and I want to learn how to Olympic lift. Do you have any online resources I could go check out or what's up?
Is there anywhere that you could send us that maybe there was something called the beginner program?
Man, I wish I knew of somewhere where you could get free, easily accessible information in enormous quantities on Olympic weightlifting.
Almost like drinking out of a fire hose?
Yeah. somewhat less painful and potentially deadly. Yeah, catalystathletics.com. We have tons of free articles, videos, all that kind of stuff. We also have a bunch of books, these things that people used to use to get information in large quantities and well-organized fashion.
Actually, looking at your Olympic weightlifting book right on my desk right now. I'm looking at it.
I'll have something to send you in a couple months to update that. But, yeah, and that book is basically the most organized, you know, start-to-finish progressive teaching tool out there that I'm aware of, which is the whole purpose I created it in the first place is because it was the tool that I desperately wanted as a misguided young man when I wanted to learn the lifts and didn't have access to a coach. And I think that's really why it's done so well since it came out in 2008. And I mean, it's completely dominated the market as small as it is because it was a huge gap in what was available.
Oh, That's great, man. I mean, we're pretty far over the hour that we were supposed to be chatting, but it's been a great conversation, Greg, and a lot of good information for our listeners because I know a lot of them do fucking bang some weights. So anything else you want to leave us with? You got any events coming up or anything you want anyone to check out?
Well, we'll be posting our 2016 seminar and certification schedule here pretty soon. We do actually offer coaching certification now, and people who are NSCA and NASM and soon to be ACSM certified can get CEUs for that stuff. So you can check that out. We're always putting out new stuff. We got a couple big projects coming out soon that I'll remain vague about, but just keep going to catalystathletics.com every single day, and you won't miss anything important.
Or just sign up for the newsletter, right?
Yeah, you could do that too.
Awesome. All right, Greg. Anybody got anything else for Greg?
No, I think that's great. Thank you, Greg. I really appreciate you taking the time to wrap with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
All right, John. I'll talk to you in that text thread soon. I'll
see you. See you, Dino. Thanks, bro.
See you guys.
Drop all right.
On,
bye.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Find out more about Greg Everett and Catalyst Athletics by visiting the website, www.catalystathletics.com. There's a ton of knowledge available in the form of articles, publications for purchase, and seminar training. Don't forget to find Catalyst Athletics on Instagram and Facebook as well. Until next time, bye!